This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
From the ArmeniaProud.com studios,
Genatsit Hayed.
This is A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on lineupmedia.fm.
Genatsit, Paylus Inchpesek, my friends. Hey, Brian, we don't have Chris today. It's you.
He's
and
gone.
Me, buddy.
He is gone again.
Yeah, well, no problem. We're going to have a great show. I've got Danny Bedrosian.
You were telling me about him. It sounds like it's going to be a great interview.
I think down the line, too, I mean, with your show on lineupmedia.fm, you've got that...
Follow the Sound.
Follow the Sounds. It'd be ideal to have you on there, or have him on your show.
Yeah. No, I'd love to have him on, at least just from what you've told me.
Yeah, I think it's going to be outstanding talking to him. And, a big goal out of Henrik Mkhitaryan in Manchester United. Hey, folks, did we know our guy Mkhitaryan was going to score a goal there? I knew it was going to happen sooner or later, and God bless.
It's a brilliant goal.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he got around that one guy. He looked like me playing.
Yeah.
I would do that against, like, 2-3-year-old kids and pull it off and score a goal. But,
yep.
But in any case, Mkhitaryan got a goal. We're excited about that. And, hey, Brian, my guest for this week is Danny Bedrosian. Danny plays some outstanding jazz music. He's been touring all over the world, basically, my man. And we're fortunate enough here to catch him on Armenia Proud. Danny Bedrosian, how are you, my man?
Good, Jono. Glad to be here. Very proud to be here.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So, you know what, Danny? I thought of you in Armenia, man, because I checked out the jazz scene. I mean, Armenians love jazz music. And And I said, you know, I'm in Armenia. I got Danny as one of my friends, and I see your videos and so forth. I said, how great would it be to have Danny in Armenia doing this, too?
Oh, it would be amazing. It would be really a dream come true for me personally. I have never been to the Republic of Armenia, and it's so sad that I haven't, because I feel so close to the place that we call our nation. And being of Western Armenian parentage, you know, coming from descended from genocide survivors, there's a lot of connection to Eastern Turkey. And because of my work, I've gone to Georgia and I've gone to Turkey, but I still haven't had the opportunity to go to the land that we continue to have as our home, including Karabakh as well. So the opportunity for me would be just amazing, and I would love to be able to have the opportunity. Yeah.
There's no question about it, Danny. And they take that music. I'm telling you, the jazz, it's like I went out to this outdoor restaurant, and there were people just sitting on like hills and drinking their bottles of wine and so forth. And, and they were just kicking back, listening to jazz music. And I said, this is so damn relaxing, and people enjoy it there. It's almost like in America how we listen to Guns N' Roses or Metallica,
sure,
or something like that. They've enriched themselves with this type of atmosphere, and jazz is very much in Armenia.
Yeah, I agree. I'm, you know, just from having Armenian friends who go back and forth a lot and friends who live in Armenia, as well as just having played a lot of the former Soviet Union personally, I see how important jazz is in that part of the world. You can really argue a strong point for jazz in places like not just Eastern Europe, but also in the Middle East and where the traditional Armenian homeland is and parts of the former Soviet Union. It's definitely taken a different way than we take it in America. I know that in the States, you know, jazz music is one of the lowest selling forms of entertainment in terms of music genres, which is probably one reason why so many classical and jazz musicians like myself find ourselves playing funk and R&B and gospel and whatever pays the bills. I think that the also the inclusion of a lot of groups that we don't consider jazz in America as jazz overseas really opens up the market in places like Armenia, where you know, and it also even in like Western Europe, where they consider a lot of stuff that we don't consider jazz in America to be jazz over there. I think they still go by the original Louis Armstrong definition of jazz, which is if you can dance to it, it's jazz. You know, it's one thing they used to say. And there's just so many different kinds of jazz, and I noticed that in the Republic of Armenia, they definitely have an affinity towards it. But I think even going all the way back to, like, Aram Khachaturian and, like, the classical greats of the Soviet Union, they were utilizing a lot of American jazz in their compositions. Khachaturian is a really good example of it, and I think that it became so much a standard part of the way Armenians composed in the Soviet Union that, you know, that has evolved into an entire subgenre of its own. And so I definitely hear the jazz that comes out of the Republic of Armenia as even distinct from, say, other former Soviet republics because of that influence of people like Khachaturian using hints of early American jazz in some of their music. So it's very unique, and I would welcome the chance to play there.
Excellent, excellent. Because it wasn't just an Armenians out there playing jazz. It was like American... American bands that are over there playing jazz, and I find that very interesting that they know the hot spot is a little country out there called Armenia that they love to play at. So it's going back to you now, Danny. Where do you guys you guys just came back from a tour? Where have you been playing?
Yeah, we just did I'm the regular keyboard player for George Clinton Parham with Funkadelic, and we just got back from East Asia. We just played in Hong Kong and Singapore and Osaka, Japan, and Tokyo, Japan. And we just got back from that tour. And
how was that?
A few days off. It was amazing. We do East Asia quite a bit, actually, especially Japan. But it had been my first time to China, which was really just an incredible experience, and the fans over there are just so appreciative, and the people in Japan also are just so much respect, very polite people, and really great great music lovers and music researchers. So it was really cool. Really enjoyed my time over there.
So they accept jazz as is it more like a culture to them, or is it just something new in their eyes that they're really drawn into?
No, I think it's more cultural. I think that American music in general does very, very well in Japan. And I think that they do have I think the only thing that Americans tend to do that's not always in favor of their own culture is they tend to overlook their own culture. So, like, Americans have been really great at initiating all of these music movements throughout the better part of, let's say, the 20th century, for example, and it seems like other cultures tend to respect it more. It's not that Americans don't like it, they just kind of take it for granted.
Right.
So I think in a lot of these other cultures, even someplace like Canada, which is like about as American as they come, they take it a different way, the culture a different way. I think they put a little bit extra respect towards the arts and things like that. Not to say that we don't in America, you know, they got the Kennedy Center for the Arts and they got all these, you know, great things that are still a part and parcel of our system. But I just feel like in general, there's a greater respect for the historical perspective of American music overseas.
Right.
So you see everywhere from, like, France to, you know, like, Armenia to China to Africa and South America and all over, I see the same kind of sort of mutual respect about American music and their interest in it as, and like you said, as an overall cultural thing, not just sound that they're hearing. And I think that in the fast globalized pace of the American culture, music is simply lost as sound, you know, and I think it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, that's very well said. And the thing about it is that I kind of, you know, when I knew that you were going to get on the show, and I just did a little, you know, I got your videos in my car. I got my Tesla playing some music of your stuff, and I found myself really relaxed, man. I was like drawn into more like this is really good stuff that I can just relax and drive and just to think about stuff. It's very calm. I loved it.
Thank you.
I loved it is what I meant. So, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. You made a thing that you said it's funk too. What's the difference between funk and jazz?
Well, I mean, and again, places overseas really lose sight of the boundaries between these genres that we've sort of created in America. But, you know, with funk music, the most commonly understood version of American funk, and it's not the easiest thing to define, but is, you know, what we consider James Brown to be, what we consider George Clinton to be, what we consider Sly Stone to be, and to some extent Prince and people like that. However, those distinctions are oftentimes lost because when we go overseas, like I said, we often play at jazz festivals and play alongside jazz and world music groups. And when I say world music, I just mean you name it, you know. It could be Russian folk music, or it could be Nigerian folk music, or, you know, from anywhere in the world. And these are the acts they tend to put us alongside. So I think that the rest of the world considers a lot of the funk acts to be more kind of like American world music than they would strictly deciphering between the subgenres that we all have. But there is a difference in the tempo. There is a difference in some of the instrumentation. A little bit more modern than the traditional format of jazz, in that there's a little bit more electronic instrumentation, or electric instrumentation, I should say, plug-in instruments.
And what I was thinking, too. The funk's got to have more computerized music to it, more sound.
It can, but it also started in an organic time when they were still, you know, still playing piano and upright and stuff like that. And in a lot of ways, it really came out of a lot of the African-American musical experience all the way back from slave time. So in a lot of ways, funk is kind of as old as the blues, in a lot of ways older than, say, jazz or country, in that it's like a very kind of primordial roots type of sound that is connected to that experience. That being said, though, like I said, you know, a lot of times American music is considered just that, American music. Once it leaves the homeland, it kind of is considered just sort of, oh, American music. We'll put it on this big jazz festival or this big blues festival, because those are American genres. So, but a lot of the people I know who play funk are also jazz musicians or classical musicians or goth or raised in the church or raised in any other combination of, you know, doo-wop or all kind of rock and roll. So it also encompasses a lot of different genres, and I think that's what originally attracted me to it, was that it had a lot of the sort of spices of all of these great genres, and yet I was very free to sort of move between all those genres and not have to be limited to any one. I think that's what I really liked about funk, and about P-Funk in particular, the band that I play with, George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic. It's really an American institution. It's the longest-running American band with the band leader still alive, and it's the largest discography of any band in the world. The group's going on about 62 years now.
Wow.
And so, you know, and something like, I don't remember exactly, like 500-plus album releases in those 62 years. Hmm. So it's really something I'm very, very proud to be a part of. It's really an American institution. And to be an Armenian-American and be able to inject and contribute the melodies and the rhythms of my people, of our people, into that and be a participant in that process is really an honor.
Yeah, that's interesting, too. Going back to what you were saying, can the blues have been, I mean, did jazz transcend from blues music? I mean, upbeat, and I think they're so similar. It just seems like blues is the, I mean, you guys, if you went one little step on the different side, it would be blues. Blues and jazz is so close together, almost tied together, you might say.
Yep, very much so. Blues is very much a root system of what jazz really came out of, a mixture of blues and what was being played in the church, and like I said, you know, the tempos were a little different. even George Clinton, my boss, has said many times that funk and jazz are both really just sped up blues. You know,
right? So, yeah, I could see that.
Which is a really kind of interesting, simplified but very kind of poignant way of putting that. So yeah, there's definitely you hit the nail on the head with a lot of that for sure.
Yeah. You know what? This question may be kind of like a question you answered earlier, but the best show and the crowd that really got into your music, was it the Asian folks out there in Japan and China, or was there somewhere else that you said, "Wow, this is the place"?
It's really hard to say. I mean, it's a good question. I think that people react differently to the same music in different places, which is like almost like a social experiment. I think nations that are held back in whatever kind of way in terms of human rights or those types of things tend to either be extremely reserved or extremely raucous in their
acceptance,
their response to our music. So I think that it's kind of a juxtaposition. And if I was going to do it by sheer numbers, you know, numbers of people screaming fans and stuff, you know, we've played Roskilde and Glastonbury festivals over in Western Europe, which have crowd sizes exceeding the hundreds of thousands. So you're talking about, you know, and we've done this festival in Brazil that has 500,000 people go to it, and these numbers are just, you know, crazy when you think about it. Like, okay, yeah, those. But I've also played clubs where it sounded just as loud, if not louder, in that in some crazy club somewhere. So, like, response, sometimes not simply numbers, it's how they're taking it and what they're, you know, what they're taking in, you know, from it.
Right.
I have seen, you know, American audiences respond in their way, and it's different things that they respond to. Sometimes it'll be something that George says that makes the people just go crazy, or sometimes it'll be just a groove that we're playing, and they get lost in it, and they really just, you know, get totally, you know. There are definitely places that come to mind. Paris is one of them. Paris is a great international city. You've got people from all over the world that live in Paris, including a huge Armenian population, which is very dedicated music goers.
And well, no question about it.
Big time, you know. And so with those type of audiences, that, you know, and they want to know if they're, you know, after the show, they do it. The Irish do it. The Dutch do it. The British, they all say, so were we better than the
really, they asked that, huh?
Who got the better show? Did the Dutch get the better show, or did we get the better show? Did we play better for them or for you, and did we respond better to you than they did?
Unbelievable. Even at a jazz show, they're making the contest between nations. That's great.
Yeah. So, and a lot of times it's just, they just want to, especially nations that really care about hosting. You know, Armenians are insane about how we host our guests, you know, and there's a lot of nations that hold these types of mores. They want to be the best host, you know.
Right.
You are our special guest. You know, sometimes I almost consider ourselves more like ambassadors than entertainers, the way that we travel.
That's what I'm talking about, though, Danny. If you're in Armenia doing this, I'm telling you, they would love this, man. They park on the side of the hills, and they're
right,
all kicking back on the slopes, drinking wine, and just enjoying this type of atmosphere. So I guarantee you, and I'm going to hook you up with Renee Day. She does all the jazz music in Armenia, and she's really into it. And I'm going to send her a message with you tagged on it, and yeah, you guys got to meet. I mean, this.
Okay.
She's
definitely
perfect. And
so
she,
I would love to do that.
Yeah, she did one of my shows maybe 2-3 weeks ago, and if you go back in our past episodes, you could listen to that one. And she's all about jazz and trying to revive and trying to get every Armenian into it, so it's beautiful.
Nice. Oh, that's great. No, I would definitely love to speak with her. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, and growing up, who was that one singer that you grasped onto, that the one that you said, man, if I can just get this tune down, this is perfect.
Of any genre, Armenian singer or what?
How about any?
Any?
Yeah.
Well, I think that That's a tough one. That's a good question. Well, one thing that's kind of funny about my current, it relates to my current position, is that, I've been playing the piano since I was three. My parents are both concert pianists, and they run a piano school up in New England. So my sisters and I all were enrolled in the school from a very young age. That being said, when I was like 11, 10 or 11, I started getting into the band I'm in now, George Clinton Parliament Funkadelic. And I remember just thinking, if I could just meet George Clinton, you know, because it was my favorite music and was my favorite band all the way up to when I joined the band. It was always my dream. When I get older, I'm going to become the keyboard player for George Clinton Parliament Funkadelic.
Wow.
And people used to always say, yeah, right. But it was something I really worked towards. And I just said, you know, when you offer new alternatives and no excuses, you have nothing but success will come your way.
Bravo.
And that was literally how I did it. I didn't take no for an answer. I sent them my music. I met the band at shows along the way as a very, very young man, and George really liked my talent and my spirit, and I was able to eventually get the gig through a lot of really hard work. So
you took the keyboard player out? And then you moved in.
No, not necessarily. I mean, the band is really big, so most of the band's history, there's been one or two or three keyboard players at the time. So when I joined in, I was one of three. And then at one point, I was one of two. Then I was by myself for many, many years as the sole keyboard player. Ah. And currently, one of our ex-players from the past has actually come back, and now there's two of us again. So I have been in many incarnations of the band and have been with the group for 14 or 15 years now, ever since then. But it's a really large band, so there's usually multiple people on almost every instrument. But I also sing with the group. I sing lead and backups with the group, and I'm very instrumental with George in the studio, working on all the studio projects that he does, because I live in the same town as George, so we get a lot of work done while we're off the road. But there was tons of people that, I mean, oh, God. I mean, my dad took me to my first James Brown concert when I was 9 or 8 at Lowell Auditorium. Blew my mind. There were a lot of people I loved. I loved Ray Charles. I loved all kinds. I mean, you name it. Tons of jazz. I sang a lot in church. I loved Armenian music. I still do. Sayat Nova, Jivani, Gomidas. That's just my stuff. The traditional stuff is really my love. And of course, all the classical music that we were playing in the school, all of that stuff. To this day, I keep up my classical regiment, my practice regiment. Every day I do between 4 and 8 hours of practicing on the piano. Sight reading, mostly classical stuff. Just to keep my chops up and to keep getting better, because I don't see any other way.
That's interesting, too, what you just said a second ago. Has there ever been in your mind, maybe I can introduce this type of Armenian instrument into the jazz world here that they're not familiar with, that could make a real good tune towards funk and all that?
Well, definitely. I mean, I think that most of the traditional Armenian instruments are so unique to just Armenians and a couple of our neighbors, that unless you're an Armenian or an Assyrian or a Yazidi or one or two other things, you won't know what this instrument even is. So there is definitely, you know, like a market for those different instruments. I mean, the duduk has definitely found its way.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of when you were saying that. Yeah.
Yeah, the duduk has definitely found its way into a lot of Hollywood. Every time they want to make a movie that has to do with ancient times, with people that don't really exist anymore, they tend to play duduk, Armenian duduk music.
To
sort of implement that feel. But I'm also a lover of the zurna. I love that instrument. I think it's a lot like the synthesizer.
Uh-huh.
And in a lot of ways, when I'm playing synthesizer solos, I'm really trying to imitate the Armenian zurna, and trying to imitate that shrill but powerful sort of war cry that comes from that instrument. All the Armenian drums, the dumbek, the dol, all of those things, of course the oud, and even like more rare things like the pakou, which is made from a ram's horn, which is another one of those woodwind instruments, and just sounds so unique. Any of those I would like to find use for in the studio, and I have a couple of those instruments myself that I have been tinkering around with, and also have several friends that play them professionally. And more importantly than even the instruments to me, a lot of the sound of Armenian music, both in the melody and in the rhythmic context, I think has never really, until maybe quite recently, found its way into popular music in the West. And I think now more than ever, you're hearing things that sound Armenian in Western music. And you're hearing it in jazz because of this huge influence of world music on jazz in the past 25, 30 years. And you're also hearing it even in things like hip-hop. I mean, more and more hip-hop tracks sound like Rabiz to me. And it's really funny that's become popular. Even the advent of the auto-tune, to me, if used correctly or the right way, it sounds very similar to both Azurna or to how some Armenian pop music sounds without the auto-tune. first time I had heard it, I was like, oh, yeah, it sounds like, sounds like how some of the Armenian singers sing, but just without the machine.
Right, yeah,
so
good point.
I'm hearing a lot of things that are Armenian-ish, but I also find myself really injecting a lot of Armenian melodies into, like, if I'm given a solo with George, a lot of times I may, in the midst of the solo, depending on how much time I'm given, inject melodies and parts from old Armenian folk music. You know, like, I could play, you know, like an Uri Trant song, or Sironakchik, or quote a little piece from a Kachaturian opus, or play something from Sayat Nova, you know, one of the great Ashugik music pieces, and just like little snippets of it, because once you hear that melody, you know exactly what it is.
Now, did your parents ever get you to just respect the old Armenian music, or were they more into let's just learn the piano, whatever's in the West, that's the format you're going to go with?
Well, I think it was probably a little of both. For certain, I had a strict classical, you know, piano training, which was very much indoctrinated towards the West. But that being said, especially in my grandparents' house, there was always Armenian folk music
of
being
course.
Played. And then my family belonged to the Compatriotic Union of Habusi, and Habusi was the village in the Ottoman Empire where my family is from. And the Compatriotic Union exists to this day, so the union would always throw things after church, big galas and picnics and et cetera, where the Armenian folk music was played and is still played at these types of events. You know, in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, there's a pretty thriving Armenian community, and they come from this little set of villages in the Voski Dasht, and basically Tigris-Euphrates River area, in what is now in eastern Turkey, and they still play this music the way they played it before 1915. So it's really, a lot of it is played in the old style with the old scales and all. It's really interesting. So that was a big part of my upbringing as well. And I think my father, knowing how nationalistic I was about my heritage, he definitely injected a lot of Kachaturian into my classical stuff. So I was playing all the, you know, the Germans, the Italians, the French, the classical stuff. But Kachaturian, being the first non-European, non-Western composer of classical music, really changed the game in terms of rhythm and melody in classical music. So I found myself playing a lot of that music at the behest of my father. And I really thank him for that, because it made a huge contribution to the way that I play today. And so even when I'm playing in a classical style, I find myself doing a lot of my chording and a lot of my melodic structure and rhythmic structure following the way Kachaturian would do it, where he's using Western instruments, but he's trying to find ways to get those bends and those semitones that you get in Armenian music,
right,
but with Western instruments. So it's really, so I guess they were a little progressive in their approach as far as having me listen to all kinds of different things. And my father is definitely the reason I was hipped to jazz music, because he also had Art Tatum, Oscar Peterson, and Miles, and all these records, you know. But there was definitely an emphasis on the classical, but really an emphasis on heritage.
Heritage, culture, keeping that alive, too.
Keeping that, and it's so ingrained in my instinctual compositional style that even if I wasn't trying to do something sounding like my heritage, I tend to even, they'd be like, oh, this sounds really Armenian, Danny. I'd be like, really? I wasn't really trying for
it. I wasn't going there.
No. Hey, was it
So I think it's also instinctual.
Was it a little weird, Danny? You said you played in Turkey. How was that? I mean, I can't even visit that country and not feel weird about it.
Actually didn't play there. Was in transit there.
Oh, okay.
We were playing in the Republic of Georgia, which is just, you know, just north of Armenia.
God damn it. You're a little, you just got to swing down a little bit. You're in Armenia.
I know. And, you know, a lot of it has nothing to do with my choice. It's just who we got booked with for George and for the band. But, you know, as you know, there's many Armenians in Georgia, and the Georgian people were very, very kind to me. And I learned a phrase in Georgian about during the show that George let me say, talking about the relationship between the people and how they've been very kind, and et cetera, et cetera, and relaying some stuff about my family in relation to Georgia. And they were very, very kind, only to have to travel through Turkey on the way back, where I was treated to lovely documentaries on the plane about how the city of Van has thrived with Turks, Armenians, Arabs, and Kurds living in peace for hundreds of years.
Oh, my God.
And then arriving at the airport and basically being swarmed by my bandmates so as to not be seen by Turkish version of TSA, their version. And finding myself covering the I, the S and the I and the A and the N of my last name on my passport.
Unbelievable.
So going from one country and being treated like a king in one country to
a movie of Midnight Express almost on the next one.
Basically. Yeah, basically. And they were like, you know, the band was like, we're not going to let anything happen to you, Danny, you know. And I was just kind of like, they just kind of surrounded me. We just kind of moved through security in a big block.
And that's right.
Spent a very short period of time there. They had actually, the management team knew about the sort of sensitivity of the situation and had originally planned for us to fly through Turkey on the way and the way back, but on the way they were able to change it to take us through Kiev instead, but realized or mishandled it and wasn't able to take us through on the way back, and so we had to go through Turkey on the way back, much to my chagrin, because I found this out as we were getting ready to go, and I was like, oh man, I don't know how I feel about this, but in some kind of funny, bittersweet way, I kind of feel like proud, a little victorious, because a couple guys in the band even said to me, they tried to stop you from ever walking on this soil again, and you're walking all over this soil right now, and not just walking on it, triumphantly walking on it, coming from playing shows with all these people screaming and chanting and loving us and loving you to you know, they made some good points. It really made me feel differently about it. And I think that they were right in the general crux of the thing, because I would like to actually go back, to be honest, but not necessarily to the places where most tourists go in Turkey. I don't really care about going to Istanbul all that much or Ankara or any of that or the Mediterranean coast. I would really want to go to Eastern Turkey, to the places where our family that was ours, and to me still is ours, and I would like to go to Harper, to where my family's from, and the place where Habusi once stood, where the village is, because that's important to me, because I have just as much connection, if not more, connection to that soil than I do to over in eastern Armenia, even though I love the fact and respect and honor the fact that we still do have a nation that's ours.
For sure.
And it has nothing to do with the Turks themselves. It just has to do with me wanting to go back to the place where we came from. That was just as Armenia as Yerevan, you know. So it was just as much Armenian in some ways, historically almost more. So I really, it's very important to me.
I get it.
That I do go back eventually.
Yeah. You know what I find kind of cool about that is your American buddies knowing what had happened in the past as well, and they're the ones that are feeling the same pain as you are, you know. It's kind of like, hey, you know what, not everyone's buying into your Van got along with Armenians, Arabs, and Turks. We all held hands and jumped around in loops, you know. That's what's cool about it, that there is, out of that we have people on this side that know what the hell happened, you know.
Yeah. Well, so. I think that it's funny because most of, you know, a lot of my best friends in America and most of the people I play with happen to be African American. Mm-hmm. I also happen to have several friends who are Native American, of Native American blood. And I think that those two groups, just as much as the Jews and in some ways even more, have some understanding for what happened to us, because I have relatives who were slaves and I have a good amount of relatives that were massacred. So
right.
African Americans and Native Americans can see
the sort of important
parallels with that.
The brotherhood.
And also, and a lot of my African American friends who grew up in places like, say, Detroit, L.A., you know, Chicago, New Jersey, Massachusetts, they grew up around Armenians and have known about the genocide since the beginning.
That's right.
Since right after it happened, their families knew about it right after it happened. And, you know, I talked to one of my friends, one of my bandmates who I play with. He's the first, he's half African American, he's from Detroit. He's the first person who ever was able to guess correct, well, the first Odar who was ever able to correctly guess ethnicity, what I was. He's like, you must be Armenian. I was like, yes!
Finally. Yes.
Not Italian, not Jewish, not Syrian, not Lebanese, not Iranian, right. Not Chaldean, not Russian, not that. I am Armenian, yes.
Yeah, they throw the Italian and Greek in there, too. So.
Greek and Jewish, Syrian.
Armenian. That's fabulous. So, basically, now you're back. What's going on right now? Then, what do you got planned for Danny Bedrosian?
Well, I just released my newest album. It's called My Oldest Friend, and it just came out on digital and CD formats. People can get it anywhere. I've been promoting that a lot. I'm doing a lot of studio work, working on a new jazz project with a Brazilian percussionist up in New York City. And we have some shows coming up at the end of this month, going back on the road right after Christmas, in the West Coast, Nevada, Utah, California, etc. And then just getting ready for the new year. You know, George still works us about, it could be anywhere between 160 and 280 days a year, give or take, sometimes more. And so getting ready to wind back up into that busy tour year and just doing a lot, playing a lot,
I admire you. How great is it? It's almost like you got to be single, though, to be on the road like this. And I mean, it's tough, isn't it, with a family?
It can be. It certainly can be. But I think that it's just if you sort of bury yourself in your work, that's sort of the best way to get on through. Because I feel like a workaholic is a workaholic, whether he's traveling or whether he sits behind a desk. You know, it's going to be that same. I'm a sort of tireless workaholic. I'm always working on a new project. I'm always practicing something new. There's always some new hill for me to climb and try to get over. Luckily, I don't think I'll ever be able to look at anything as good enough or ready or... So it's always just kind of constant flux, which is probably a good thing for us as human beings to be in that mode, because it stops you from...
Well, you're never satisfied.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It stops you from being discouraged or bored with anything.
No, I got it. I have got to get you in touch with Rene Day, and you guys... work things out. I'd love to see you and your group play in Armenia. It'd be outstanding.
I would love that.
Yeah, that would be great. And another thing, I'd love for you to give us updates on where you're going to be. We've got Armenians everywhere, and you know, Toronto, they play, LA. I mean, you guys, wherever you guys are headed, just let us know, and we'll put it on our site and give a big shout out every time you guys are somewhere. You know, it'd be ideal.
That is fantastic. I will definitely keep up with you guys, and they can. We got a little tour dates page on my website. They can go to DannyBedrosian.com and check up on any new news that I'm, you know, any new stuff that I'm doing. We'll definitely be in touch with you guys and let you know where we are when we're coming there.
And they can find you on Facebook as Danny Bedrosian as well, right?
That's right. Yep, Facebook, Twitter. Twitter, perfect. Instagram, all that stuff, all that good stuff.
Perfect. Perfect, Danny. I appreciate your time, man, and thank you very much, and God bless. And when you're welcome on the show anytime, and just let us know what's going on. That'd be ideal. And I'll keep in touch with you and Renee Day. I'm going to make this thing happen, so I'm pretty excited about it. And I think she will be, too.
Oh, I'm excited about it. Thank you so much, Jonna, for having me. It's my absolute pleasure, and I would love to come back and talk to you anytime.
All right, Danny. Thank you very much, and take care, brother.
Thank you. You too.
What a great interview, my man.
That was brilliant.
I loved it. I loved it. Danny's so down to earth, too, you know?
Yeah.
I really am going to hook him up with Renee Day, and I'm going to get on this as soon as I get out of the studio, because I really think that her passion and his passion with jazz music, I think it'd be ideal to have a show in Armenia. Yeah. Why not have an Armenian up there from America doing this? You know, he was up in Georgia. What? That's like skip, and a jump to Armenia there.
Yeah, so it's just a nice little drive.
Boom, there you go. You're in Armenia, you're playing jazz, and I think I got to hook them up. And folks, if you're looking to get some stuff on Amazon, it's Christmas time. Christmas time's right around the corner. Why not go through ArmeniaProud.com? Go through ArmeniaProud.com, and then you scroll down to the middle of the page there on the middle right-hand side. You got Amazon. Click on Amazon and shop away, and ArmeniaProud.com gets a little love back. So you can't go wrong with that.
Cannot go wrong.
Can't go wrong with that. And Lineup Media, your show, your big show there.
Yep, Follow the Sound.
We may get Danny to do that show.
I've got to get Danny to do the show.
Yeah, it'd be ideal. It'd be ideal. So my friends from Jono, no Chris, Brian, it's been great again, my man.
Great show.
Yeah, and we'll hook up with Ani and Mariam on a future date, but right now we couldn't get anyone, and we just said, you know what, let's roll with Danny.
It's getting close to the holiday season. Everybody's busy. You know?
We almost lost Danny. He said, you know, I'm on a tight schedule, so we had to run in the studio and get this thing done. Well, in any case, it was a great show. Brian, thanks for working the boards again. Chris, thank you for not being here. Genatsa Kishe Party, my friends. We'll see you next week.
Tune in next week for another episode of A Toast to Armenia with Jono Kabinjian. Find the show online at ArmeniaProud.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation at Facebook.com/ArmeniaProud. Or Twitter at Armenia Proud. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.